This is a tape for Heritage Development. The narrator, Sister Rosa, would you say your name, please? The narrator, Sister Rosa.
Sister Rosa Wagner.
Today's date is
March 10, 1982.
The two interviewers,
Sister Consuelo Hoops
and Sister Sally Witt. We're at St. Joseph Convent in Baden, Pennsylvania. Sister Rosie, you did some work thinking about your background. Would you like to start and tell us, please?
That's too sudden. People, is that shut off? I, Sister Rosa Wagner, Sister of St. Joseph. I was born the 26th of June, 1897. Lawful daughter of Paul Wagner and Teresa Horvath Wagner. My birthplace was in the village of Kisch-Gerjowatz in the county of Savorica in the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. I was baptized on the 28th of June, 1897, in the Church of the Holy Spirit, where my parents were married on the 27th of January, 1889. And their witnesses were Stephen Toth and Stana Nemes. My paternal grandparents were Joseph Wagner and Barbara Sabe. And my maternal grandparents were Thomas Horvath and Anna Nett. Sometime later, our parish church of the Holy Spirit burned to the ground, but the important records were saved and transferred to the Archdiocese of the city of Zagreb. The map of Europe has changed considerably. And today, the village of my birth in the Austro-Hungarian Empire is now the Communist Republic of Yugoslavia. My grandparents owned large farms, vineyards and orchards, flax for fine linen. They were self-supporting. That's why they stayed in the same place for two, three, and four generations.
They could do that,
yes.
And often they had enough of land to will the children, parts of it. Well, the children stayed and helped to maintain the farms. And their parents would get too old to work, well, the children took care of them. And that way the generations continued on. And of course they had beautiful vineyards and fruits, and they sold all that, what they didn't need.
Sure.
My father was the first one to come out to this country.
Did he come by himself?
He came out by himself, and you see him walking out of the Ellis Island there. And after he had read for us, he sent for us. But first, when we came out, he sent for us, and we left from Antwerp in the Red Star liner of the Cunard Lines.
How old were you at the time?
4 and a half. Now Catherine, my sister Catherine, came with us. My mother brought Catherine with us. We had a younger sister, the youngest of the three of us, and my father said to leave her there because mother had enough for that, had taken care of the two of us. And anyhow, plans had been made to bring her, but before we sailed, she developed, the night before we sailed, she developed mumps and child ailments. When she got over that, she developed measles. So my father said, leave her for Aunt Rose to bring up, his sister. So it turned out that she didn't get over. And then during the First War, she married. And she had to, when the communists got into her part of the country, well, where I was born, they put them out of their home. Nice, they have nice homes. And they just put them out and with what they had on their back and took over the homestead for the barracks for the soldiers.
Where did your sister go?
They put them in the boxcar to take them to the ovens. Talking in the boxcar. And some relatives built a friends in the underground in Bristol. But she died there. She died in Germany. They escaped from this place with the help of the underground. And she died there. They traveled there. They went to Baden-Baden, Germany, and from there they went to other places.
Mm-hmm.
I have been someplace I have found. Her little boy after they went back to the home where they had their home, where they were pushed out of. There was nothing in it, but even the floor was torn up. And it was filthy. In the meantime, I had been sending packages to them. My sister, Teresa in Michigan, she used to send me the money in there. I'm sure that helped them out a good bit. Everybody was real good to me.
Was your sister able to write and tell you some of these things?
She got them through. She had a few friends that she could trust. She got them. She even had, there was a friend in the post office who let her have the package. But she wrote and said to me one time, she says, over, he said, I wouldn't want to be the one to open it. I used Elmer's, not Elmer's, what was that glue that you use it on
the page?
No?
Not
it's better than that, because it's clear. Use it for gluing china. I used to use a lot of it at the hospital for making.
Were you in the community sisters when you sent these packages?
Oh, yes, out at the hospital.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes, out at the hospital all that time. Sisters were very, very good to me there. Sister Nancy, Lord of Mercy, she gave from her sisters or her nieces, little ones. Sister Nyla's friends. And Mrs. Dr. Stevenson's wife. She used to bring, she'd have the doctor's clothes cleaned and bring the lovely suits. And a lot of things. And that man at the post office, I asked that postmaster in Carson Street what I should do about the package. Anything you wash it so it's wrinkled.
That was an expense then, sending those.
It was. Yeah. But everything they had was gone. They had nothing. The dirty old house that they left and the soldier when they got out there. But anyhow, they had some. Some of the property was destroyed. They tried to make a garden afterwards, and one of the little children was out in there playing around, and he picked up what he thought was a stick, and it was a grenade. And when they looked to see what happened, he was just blown to bits, and couldn't even see anything coming down.
This is one of her children.
And her husband died from the hardships of the end, pushed from one place to another river. When they were pushed out of their home, they were sent into a big field where there was no protection, barbed wire. And they were out in the snow and the cold and the rain and everything. And then it shot from there to another place. And then they were packed in a boxcar. And some friends heard about it. And through the underground, they were rescued. Some lie silent asleep.
You say some nights you didn't sleep, worrying about them.
Not one that lives here is her daughter. My sister Marie's daughter, when I was left there. She has a nice home there. It's a beautiful city. It's beautiful. When I was a little toddler, and went with mother. They have beautiful streets here, walled streets, where in this city, where they don't permit any kind of automobiles or anything like that. It's all for promenaders, they call it. Walk. Meet their friends, everybody dressed up the best they have.
What language did you learn to speak?
Well, we taught Hungarian and German. And then we learned Croatian. Your child can pick up. Then your child can learn anything.
Do you still know those languages?
I can understand some words, but no. not having anyone to speak to, you figured be infected. If someone sat and talked, I could pick out a good one. Anyhow, my sister's husband then died from the hardships of this traveling from one place to another, and they escaped from into Germany. He wasn't there. I think I was sent a very sent a letter in 2 weeks to after they got there. He died. Just too worn out. Yes. So he left her with this niece that lives here. A son that was almost worked to death in the communists. He spent most of his time after all this was over in hospitals. Trying to get well.
Where is he now?
He's in Germany. Unten Hager is the name of the place where he built himself a nice little home. My sister Teresa has pictures of the place. And the street, the name of the street beside the house that we built. Nice. But they have all that. He said they have to be careful when they're riding because even in Germany, West Germany, they feel that there's eyes boring through their back. Communist agents. You never know who it is. So they just feel that there's somebody. And they hate to live under that stuff. And this one, there's a lot of tourists along there, you know.
Adriatic Columbia, it's a tourist attraction.
And that's how they get most of their money.
I see.
And is that, did you say that's where your niece lives now?
Mm-hmm.
First learned about the Sisters of St. Joseph, Sister.
In Denora.
In Denora. When your family came over and they settled in Denora?
We settled in Brownsville. When we came over, we settled in Brownsville. And my dad started working the mines. That's quite a change from working on a fresh air farm.
Mm-hmm.
But he always was one that adventure. He wanted to see what things were like and how they did things and how they made their money and who was crooked and who wasn't.
Did he find out some of that with regard to the mines?
He found that. Then he has the man they call the checkwayman would weigh the coal that came out and they'd check that against the ones who were filling the cars. They had a way of checking it. Or he had numbers. And he found that. Well, mother didn't want him to stay in the mines because there were too many days when a man had been brought out either crippled for life or dead. And they had their first aid station in, sort of in the back of our house, not in the house itself, a little shed off someplace. And mother didn't like that.
What attracted your father to Brownsville?
Well, he just wanted to come out and see how things were. What was going on for a different part of the country. Well, after he, mother didn't want him to go back to Illinois, so he took a little vacation for himself and he went out to North Carolina. And when he saw that the place out there, he bought himself a 40-acre timber farm with a little plantation on it, you know. But he thought that would support the people. He hired a young couple to, he said, if they take care of it, they can use the plantation, whatever they grew, they could have it. And if they'd watch the timber so it wouldn't be burned down, because it was near the Atlantic Railroad. And often the fires would start from the cinders coming out of the engine. So anyhow, that's, he spent his first earnings there.
Let me ask you this about the mines. When he found some of those things out, did he try to do anything about it?
Well, they had a, he didn't have to do anything about it because there was a big explosion.
Oh.
Well, he quit this mine and he went to Carolina, and then when he came back, he went to a Fairhope. And that was in 1907. And one afternoon on his way home, he nearly stumbled. There was an open shaft to the hillside, and it was one that you come up in a basket, like, you know, elevator. Well, he came out there. He walked out, and he nearly stumbled over a horde of rats walking out. And he's, right away he knew that this was trouble. So he said to my mother, I think there's too much gas in the mines, because the rats were all coming out. And he said, that's a bad sign. So he told his boss, he said to the superintendent, he says, I think you better look around in there. He says, there's too many new men from various countries in there that can't read. And when they find a gas in one of the rooms where they have finished digging coal, they would seal that up, and they would put in red letters, in great big red letters, danger. And that meant they were not to open that, to go in there with an open lamp. Well, he says to me, there's too many greenhorns in that mine, and he said, there's too much gas, and he said, the rats are all coming out. So he went to his superintendent and told him, he said, Mr. Cross, there's going to be trouble in that mine. And sure enough, it wasn't a week till one night he said, and he walked the kitchen, walked back and forth, and he said, my mother said, what's the matter? He said, I don't think I ought to go to work tonight. She said, well, don't go then. He had this on his mind. And that night, it was in February, the 27th of February, the most bitter night you'd ever want to come out of heaven. When you walk, you could hear the crunch and the squeak of the snow under your, the frost under your shoes. So around about way after supper, a gray big blow up came. There were 365 men killed in that explosion. They were two mines, a Dar mine and the Mariana mine, connected underground, and the one mine connected the other. But our little town that we lived in at that time, forever, it was like every window that would come in the house, we lived in a single house. All those coming houses, every window was blown out. When you look out, it would scare you. It looked like the ghost town. And every window in it was shattered, every house. And most of the men in there were all in the mines. My dad and a couple other men were left outside. I can remember when I was about 10 years old, it was about that time. I can remember the shock. I thought the house was going to fall on us. I didn't know that my mother was pregnant or was going to have a baby, but anyhow, it, my father went to out to the Delta Rescue, and anybody else that could that was left went out to rescue, out to the hillside, because the outside shaft collapsed. And then, of course, the, where the electric car, the elevator, it also folded up. And all this, all the gas fumes and everything stayed in. And some people from Bill Vernon and Charlie Roy and all around came to help. The streetcars were loaded to come out to help. And every woman was up on the hillside waiting to get word from them. And my mother was in bed, and she called me. She says, "I want you to put some water on the stove to heat, some warm water." And I didn't say what for or what. And then she says, and told me to get some towels and what else. And big round basin. And a baby basin. I guess she had it ready, you know. And she had put it beside her bed. And she told me what to do. And then I had everything there, she told me. And then she hands me, hauls out from under the covers a baby. And that petrified me, as I was scared bad enough with all this going on. And she handed me this baby. And, oh, she said, I want you to, she told me how to do it. And I said, I'll break it. It'll break in two. She said, no, it won't break in two. And all I could think of was a little skinny chicken. A little blue. It was blue. It was cold. And Mother says, oh, we'll have to. We don't want the baby to get cold. So hurry up. She showed me how to wash it. And I was scared to death.
Sister?
I was 10 years old.
Oh my goodness.
There wasn't a woman. They were all up on the hillside waiting to see if their husbands were coming home. And my father would have stayed. I mean, he wouldn't have gone to the rescue out on the hillside if he had known that she was going to. But the shock brought the premature birth,
see?
Shock brought on the birth, because they weren't expecting that to happen maybe for 2 weeks. I learned that afterwards when I grew up. Mother said how she was left without a woman to help her. And how many days my father was after till they got enough men to get through the debris to the ones inside. He was overcome, and his superintendent says, "Paul, you better go home before you fall down." So when he came home and he found out we had he did fall down. I couldn't imagine where the baby came from. I never dreamed of such a thing, you know. And I was scared about the other thing happening, all upset. And all the noise and racket that was going on, I was so distracted. And then hand me a baby. I didn't even stop to think, to ask her where she got it. I never thought about it. Think of it. You know, just recently I told him about that, one of his birthdays. I think it was your last birthday, last February to be exact. I recounted this affair to him. That he was born the 27th of January, a terrible night, cold. My mother was left without a woman to help her. And she called me, I said, "I gave you your first bath, Joe, so you ought to feel honored." This is the first time I ever heard about it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. father wouldn't tell them. You know, you didn't talk about that these days. About babies and stuff. I guess that's why I was so dumb. Oh, I said, yes, I did your first birth. So I said, that was when your first, my first birthday gift to you.
That was your beginning of your nursing?
Yes.
Did your family move after that?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's belong to Denora from there.
Was Denora already a town by then?
Oh, yes. Oh, that town, Denora. He went to work in the steel and wire and then in Denora.
What year was that?
Well, I don't know exactly what year we went there, but this was in 1907, where the explosion was a mine explosion.
Where did you live in Denora?
Out on the place from Denora, Place Plan, as they called it, out over the hill. My father bought two double lots, one here and one here, and there was a street across here beside, and there was a street in front of us, and the alley in the back. It's real nice. He was smart. He built a house on this lot and he made a garden on that lot. Two double lots was a good bit of land. And then he bought three single lots across the road from us. He made that into garden, grew nice corn on there, and planted some fruit trees in that one opposite where he built the house. But what made him leave the Fairhope later on, they had a strike. The men went on strike and they killed one man, and I guess they were striking for fair wages and for real money. They paid the men, those mines paid the men with aluminum tokens. And they were in 5, 10, and 25, and 50 cent values, you know, like they have your money now. You couldn't go anywhere to buy. You couldn't buy anywhere with that.
You had to buy from the
company. You had to buy in the company store. And my mother went to the store and she told the storekeeper in German. She found I'd talk to him. She told him in German that they were running a slavery. They were using their men. You're making slaves out of our husbands. She read the law down to him. And she said, in this day and age, we're not supposed to have slaves. She wasn't afraid to tell them all. She told my boss the same thing. So when they put the miners out and their families out on the hillside in tents.
You mean during the strike?
During the strike. I guess some of them didn't have the wherewithal to pay their rent, so they put out.
Was your father one of them?
And
was your family put out?
Oh, no. No, he didn't. We weren't put out. Dad had his rent paid, and he picked himself up and went to Denora and built a house on the lot, on one of the double lots.
Yeah.
And as soon as it was habitable, he didn't wait till the finishes, you know. It was habitable, and he came. He says, come on, we've got to get him out of this. So he got out. And we got out of there.
Was your father involved with the miners' union at all?
No, he wasn't, sister. He wouldn't join any kind of... He knew there was no good in it. He wouldn't join. So we even had company doctor and... His wife was the nurse. We liked the doctor Dixon. was real, real, real kind. He was a pappy of the town. And the old lady was nice too. I can see her. Yep, she's tall, tall, straight lady. She must have been. She reminded me of what they say Grandmother Wagner was like. Real tall and straight, and she wore a black ribbon bow in her, or in front of her donut here. She was the boss. She was the boss of the town. But everybody liked the toy. She was very attentive to anybody that became here. So I can remember I had terrible earache, ill earache. It's one where I'm not deaf. My trouble is that I got the hearing too keen. My hearing is very keen, and the least noise amplified ever bothers me. That's one of my purgatory, I think. And anyhow, my mother was afraid that I would do something to my brain, because it healed a terrible ear. Anyhow, she stopped and he went around the horse and buggy through the town. And the road passed our house. So mother stopped him and he came in. He brought out peroxide of hydrogen. He poured it into a teaspoon and put a match under it, warmed it. And he plunked the head down on the side and poured the thing in. And the abscess burst and then my ear drained out and hasn't hurt me since. And if I'd have been today, I'd be taking pills and shots and all kinds of stuff and maybe I'd end up with a surgeon. Yeah. We liked the old man. But we didn't like their company store. You know, they could cheat you. They sold second-grade goods.
Yeah.
What was left from other stores, you know, like that. And they would pick that up for cheap and sell it to the home buyers for extra. They gain a little bit on it.
Mm-hmm.
My father used to say, there's more crooks in the world than what you can ever. More crooks in the world.
What company was it?
I don't remember that. What company is it? And I like the school. The country school. I liked our teacher, Mr. Althaus. You had to learn your spelling and your reading, and you had to know your arithmetic, otherwise you weren't allowed to do anything else. Nowadays they have all kind of extra curriculum things, and you get them out of college if they don't know how to spell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to Dr. Weiser the last time I visited there for a pair of glasses, and that girl couldn't spell Rosa. She had Roger. I said, my dear, you better go back to grade school and how to spell.
When you went to Denora, was there already St. Charles Parish there?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Was that the parish you went to?
Yes. Father Geibel. Mm-hmm.
Was it up on, what's the name of that street up above Thompson?
Thompson Avenue. Heslop and Thompson.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. My mother had a double lot on the corner. Thompson Heslop. Like here's the church on this. Mother's lot was up on the other side of the street, on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So all she had to do is walk across the street when she got old and go to church. She bought the lot because I'm going to build a house on it, and when I get old I can go to church every morning. She didn't get old, she died. She was only 48 years old. She died. So, Dad sold that lot too when we left there. He sold that lot. He sold everything in the world. Steele and Mar, yes, Steele and Mar kind of lived there. He liked it, yes, but everything ran down then. He soon went, after Mother died, they left there and went to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Were you in the community then?
Oh, yes. That was the zinc mines, or zinc mills. They put up the zinc mills. And they put a little housing up for the laborers who worked in the zinc mills. And really, so many died from the fumes of it. And even the paint off the houses peeled. Yeah, it poisoned everybody. I don't know how many died there, Sister. It was like a ghost town, like the ghost town you see in the Geographic from the gold rush days. The house, empty houses. I don't know what year I went there to visit. After, how long after we moved from there. And I saw this settlement, and it just made your heart sick. Everything sad looking. And of course the meals were down. I was glad our family moved out of there. We went into the Ford's work then.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. In Michigan then. That's where the all men folks went into. The automobiles.
Did you go to St. Charles School in New York?
Yes, I went to them 2 years. And then for music lessons for a couple of years. So John and Henrietta gave me music lessons.
Who was that?
Henrietta.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the teacher's name, Sister?
Mother Bonaventure was one. Sister. Regis, not Regis. What was it? Right? No, she wasn't Ryan. Regis what?
Reagan.
Reagan. Joe Steele talks about her. My brother Steele, he'll never forget Sister Regis.
Really? What did he think of her?
Oh, he thought she was the lady of the. He felt that she was great. He's a. If you can't learn math from anybody, you sure get it from her. She seemed sort of rough, but that's what those girls like.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Mary James Yingling was there. She taught fine needlework on Saturdays. And my sister Catherine took needlework from Sister Mary James. And I wanted to learn, but I had to, the day I wanted to go to needlework, I had music lessons. And so we fixed it that she'd teach me what she learned from Sister in the needlework, and I'd teach her what I learned from Sister Andrew.
Oh, did that work?
Sure, as you can see.
You did that after.
I did all those up on them up there too. I have one back at one of those. And some that I've sold since.
She must have been a good teacher. You must have been a good learner.
And some of the fancy work that I did when I went home to visit, I said, I didn't recognize them. I said, oh, where'd you get that? And where'd you get this? Who did that? You did. I said, oh, I did not. I couldn't see myself doing anything like that after I started work in the hospital in different places.
Who were some of your teachers in
different? Sister Coletta. And she told us about the guard bill that they had in Edinburgh. They refused the sisters to go in the school, public school, with their hat on.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to tell us, have you got that? Because we used to stand and admire, you know, thing that she went to court about that. She refused to take the hat off. I think Mother Mary was in the office when that happened. I have a picture of her. She was my maiden profession, the first vice, and the father's under her. But Bishop Canavan confirmed that we had quite a confirmation class. And he came to confirm us. We thought that was something. I can still see him so straight and so.
Where was St. Charles School then?
Right there.
Was it underneath the church?
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Then they went up on the Fifth Street, I think, later after we moved from there. And our high school, the public high school used to, the pupils used to run past us at dismissing time. And then, oh, hey, Nick, hey, Nick. So, one girl always seemed to have a pick on the Catholics. And I just swung my books. I didn't want to stress this name. I swung them at her, and she didn't like it. She got a little wallop. And I thought, now I'm going to get it when I get home, because Mrs. Goldbeer was going to complain on me. But she never went to mother to complain on her, swinging the books at her daughter.